Do you have a dark curiosity? Follow and listen to Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
KJ and Lyons on a Sunday. John, I clearly don't know what day of the week it is, but I think, John, with this Patriots team, I think we, you know how we did we've turned into a commercial. John, I wonder how we have like an intelligent, reasonable, but yet honest conversation about this franchise, about what we're seeing on the field, about what we're seeing in the front office. Like a full 360 on this team. Maybe that, I don't know if that comes at the end of the season. Maybe we do an autopsy. It would probably be a five-parter. It's that bad. But there just seems to be so many things inherently wrong that saying that the head coach is just too easy of an answer.
Yeah, so look, in KJ, I think the head coach is part of it, but you have to look beyond that. This is a, I think, top-down, multi-year organizational problem, right? You look at this roster from 2017 to 2022, they didn't draft well. It looks like then last year in free agency, they essentially brought in no impact players outside of Antonio Gibson, who's a complimentary piece. They also didn't draft well last year. You have assistant coaches who in some respects seem a little over their heads. You have an ownership group that, frankly, KJ, they're not used to sucking, and over the last couple of years they have, and I don't know how well they're handling it. Just, it's top-down, multi-level type failure problem throughout the entire organization.
So, because you hear all the chants, right? So you're going to hear people say, sell the team. Well, you know that's not realistic. You hear fire the head coach, where that might be realistic, but it's such an anomaly because probably I would say, not even Mike Tomlin had the level of relationship with the Rooney family when he was hired, right? Like Gerard Mayo was one of these first head coaches that I can think of in recent memory. Maybe Jason Garrett. This is similar to Jason Garrett, where you have such a strong relationship with the ownership that ownership is fine turning their head coaching reins over to you despite not seeing any evidence that you're head coach ready. Those are things that the fans necessarily they feel like they have control of, but I think it's the thing you have the least amount of control over. I think the one thing, and this kind of goes to Belichick, and this is not bringing Belichick out of the dead. We would say you would give Bill Belichick an A-plus in terms of head coaching over the course of history, correct?
Yes.
What would be the grade you would give him as a general manager and personnel?
So over the course of 20 years or just the last five or six? Because it's different. Because
Over the course of when you had to make decisions that were the harder decisions, right? Because that's where we are here. Like, these are where we're at the point where the hard decisions have to be made. You could say during the golden years, Tom Brady was a self-recruiting piece that while we saw Matthew Judon for 2 years constantly tweeting out, trying to get people to come here and getting no responses. So let's just say once Brady, so post-2019.
Yeah, post-2019, I'd give Bill like a C minus at best. I mean, a lot of it is because they got the quarterback wrong. And part of that was him putting Patricia and Judge in charge of the offense. Part of that was Mac just was not a good player with a limited ceiling. So, I mean, if you look at the entirety of the dynasty, you'd probably give him an A minus, B plus as a GM. If you look at just since 2019, it's C minus-ish, I guess.
Right, because you had the quarterback for all those years, and you had players on both sides of the ball willing either to take less money to come or to come, especially on the defensive side, when you have people like Junior Seau coming through where they were still treading those tires.
They drafted a lot better in those first 15, 16 years.
But mostly on the defensive side of the ball, for the most part, correct?
Yeah, but they drafted the greatest tight end of all time. Yeah, receivers that won Super Bowl MVPs, offensive linemen.
It's one thing finding the tight end, right? But it would be another thing if you found like the next All-Pro Hall of Fame receiver, right? Because Belichick's mind was like, hey, if you can't block for me as a tight end, you're not going to be playing tight end. So that's the other part of it. You know, you came up on Gronk, and that's really good. Even Hernandez, and you reinvented yourself. Still, that's more on the coaching side. But in terms of, like, going to go shop for players to fill needs, I'm with you, probably C minus, closer to D. So now when you get to this situation, clearly you're not going to have the A-plus coach. All right. No matter who you brought in after Belichick,
right?
You're probably not even going to have the B-level coach, okay? But here is your opportunity to get yourself into the B, A minus conversation when it comes to selecting the pieces that are going to be on the field. This is like the 30,000 foot level issue that I kind of have is, hey, if your real issue with Bill over the last couple of years was there was too much control, and this is from ownership, there was too much control. You wanted to get ownership. You wanted to get ownership back of control over the team. Why not go and get the top tier general manager personnel guy in the league? Say, here's who's going to be your coach. It's going to be Gerard Mayo. You've got a window of about 50 games to work with him. But if you can get the best players and pieces out there available for him, then will tell us, can he coach well crafted after players versus just getting scraps, which has really happened here.
Yeah, and it's funny you bring that up because Andy Hart and I on postgame yesterday had a very similar discussion in that the organization is in such a bad spot because you can't tell fully, hey, is this a coaching staff problem? Is this just a roster problem? Is it both? Like, if they had a good roster and right. they were still losing games like this, you'd say, hey, the coach doesn't have it. Or if they had this roster, but a lot of their games were competitive, like Buffalo last week or Seattle in week two, you could say, hey, they just need help on the roster. But when you have Ladd McConkey, who you traded down and passed on, catching two touchdowns in 94 yards and 8 overall receptions yesterday and dominating you while Jaylen Polk and Javon Baker do nothing for you all season. But then on top of it, you have multiple coaching mistakes, whether it's play calling, whether it's saying publicly you're not going to start Ramondre Stevenson and then starting him, right? Like, that's the thing. It's not one or the other. Like, sometimes you can
Let
tell
me ask
clearly
you about that,
it's one
that,
or the other.
That comment right there, who does that bother more? The fans or the team about Ramondre Stevenson telling the public that Ramondre Stevenson is probably going to be benched for, because at the end of the day, Ramondre Stevenson had two carries. So that's kind of a benching in itself.
But who does that make upset?
Okay, but who does that make more
about.
Who does that make more upset? The fans who are on the outside of the locker room or the team that's inside the locker room? Because we don't know ultimately.
The team.
Do we know what the discussion was to Ramondre Stevenson
Antonio Gibson? Said after the game that he was never told that he was going to start, but Mayo said to the production crew for the team broadcast and then before the game
so
publicly.
The media that, side, yes.
But that's the problem. And you and I have talked about this since August. Some of the mixed messaging and the left hand not knowing what the right hand doing, that was a problem all the way back to Mayo saying, hey, May's the better quarterback in camp, but Van Pelt saying, no, Jacoby's the reason that May's not starting, a.k.a. implying Jacoby was better and not on the same. Like, this is another example of that, but we're not in August, right? We're week 17 in December, and you say publicly, we're not going to start this guy. And by the way, deservedly so. Stevenson, 7 fumbles this year, most of a running back. But then to turn right around and start him, to me, that's a sign of either communication breakdown, dysfunction, whatever you want to call it, but
or trolling.
But no, it's not. But I was in that locker room, problem.
Wait a minute. Okay, so he told the public that Ramondre Stevenson would not start and starts Ramondre Stevenson. You don't think that, and then Antonio Gibson tells you after the game he was never told that he was going to start. So guess what? Gerard Mayo sold the media what he wanted to sell them.
You're making excuses for
him. No, wait. You just said that. If Gibson said at the end of the game he was never told he was going to start, then what you're being told is the conversation that we're getting from the media in the media is totally different from what he's getting with his team. And if he's consistent with his team and inconsistent with the media, then, hey, we just have to figure out why those things are. It doesn't matter that it is. I mean, at the end of the day, did Ramondre Stevenson only carry the ball twice yesterday?
He started when they said he wasn't going. You're making excuses for
him
right now.
Did he carry the ball two times yesterday?
You're looking through
how many times did Ramondre Stevenson carry the ball yesterday? Does that look like a start to you, carrying it twice?
He started the game, KJ. He was in the starting lineup.
What?
Just admit, the guy screwed this one up.
How did he screw
way
it up?
Too many excuses
when Gibson told you at the end of the game,
exactly.
He was never told
that's
he was starting. Wait a minute, he was never told he was starting, and guess what? He didn't start, John. So
yes,
the communication
and then you said
is
publicly
there.
Publicly, the guy was going to start.
Publicly,
it's
private is different.
It's different. Mixed messaging. Guys in the locker room look around at that and say, "Who's in charge here?"
You think those guys
remember
in the locker room really care about what we say over here
offense?
Over FM airwaves? Do you think those guys care? Now, do you think Gibson wanted to
be asked about that after the game? Do you think he really, after losing 40-7, wanted to deal with people saying, "Hey, why did your head coach say you were going to start and the other guy was benched?"
So who asked him that? Someone from the public or someone in his private organization?
It was in the public. After the game.
So there you go.
I don't know what your point is.
They do not care what the public messaging is to us. And why should they? They have games to play.
Every coach uses the media to send messages. And Mayo has screwed that up time after time.
Are we not in an environment where the mixed messaging is part of the regular messaging now? It can be used as a tool, John. This is media where we are now.
It's a tool. He's screwing it up.
Well, if that's what you want to believe. Remember 2 weeks ago,
I said, I want to believe KJ. He goes on the Greg Hill show every Monday and walks things back.
That's the whole point.
Do you really think he's playing chestnut checkers with this stuff?
Oh, he doesn't care what game you choose. It could be Atari. He doesn't care if it ain't your game. If it isn't your game, he does not care. The organization does not care about what we think in the media.
Yes, they do. Look at Robert Kraft's campaign to get into the Hall of Fame over the last 10 years.
Okay, but do you or I vote for him to get into the Hall of Fame, or is it a group of other owners?
Is it not a group of other people?
It's their own private club who determines who gets into the Hall of Fame.
I cannot believe you're defending that Gibson.
I'm not saying that it's right or wrong. I'm just saying what it is.
What it is is a massive communication failure.
For who?
For the team.
If Gibson told you at the end of the game, post-game, I was never told I was going to start, and he didn't start, then guess what? Ramondre Stevenson knew he was going to start. Gibson knew he wasn't going to start. Just because you tell the media something different doesn't mean that the communication is different. Now, if Gibson told you, hey, I was under the impression I was going to be starting and then some things changed at the last minute, then there is the follow-up question, because now the message that's getting out to the media is contradicting what's going on in the locker room. But if there's a message in the locker room and we get a different message out here, look, can you be mad for lying? This isn't a court of law. Nobody's got a hand on a Bible to testify.
AJ,
you swear?
Does this every week.
Then there's the consistency.
Like he screws stuff up.
Play a sucker to catch a sucker.
He's not doing that, KJ. You're just making excuses for him.
Why am I making excuses for him when you just...
You're giving him way too much credit.
John, did you not say he does this every week? Do you think the man is so incompetent that he doesn't know? Like, he's telling you we're going to start somebody else and then starts the same guy, and then the guy who was supposed to start tells the media, I was never told I was going to start. If you feel played, that's okay. But if it doesn't matter to them, why should you be mad if they tell you a different conversation?
I don't know why you would say it doesn't matter to them. When you have guys in the media talking about play calling criticisms or changes to be made for next year.
Do you really think that when Gerard Mayo sat down with his running backs room and said, you know, hey, because the pressure is on me right now, I got to tell them one thing and do another?
I guarantee you that didn't happen.
Okay, so he tells them, look, Ramondre, you're going to be starting, and Gibson got more of the carries. That's just how it happened.
I think he wanted to start Gibson, and he did not communicate it clearly to Van Pelt, or Van Pelt didn't clearly communicate it down. So somebody
stopped Gerard Mayo from doing what he wanted to do with his 53 personnel.
I think it's another sign of he's in a little over his head. And part of that is just natural being a first-year head coach and getting the job a year early, but it's just another sign that he's in a little over his head.
KJ and Lyons, 617-779-7937. That's also the text line here at WEEI. We'll get to your calls next, plus your text as well. Right now it's time to trend with David Azer.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, let's get you caught up with what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. The Patriots' losing streak continues after falling to the Chargers 40-7 yesterday afternoon. Drake May was able to return to the game after suffering a head injury on the team's opening drive. May threw for 117 yards and one touchdown in the loss. Star cornerback Christian Gonzalez left the game with a head injury and did not return. The Patriots' final game of the season is next Sunday at 1 o'clock versus the Buffalo Bills. The Bruins salvaged the second game in their back-to-back with the Columbus Blue Jackets, earning the victory 4-0 after a tough outing on Friday night. Jeremy Swayman had 19 saves in the shutout. Rookie forward Fabian Lysell was recalled from Providence and made his NHL debut with the Bruins last night. The Celtics are getting set to face the Pacers once again after blowing them out on Friday night. Drew Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis are both listed as questionable for this game. Tip-off for tonight's game from TD Garden is scheduled for 6 p.m. Stay tuned later in the day for Sports USA's coverage of the NFL right here on WEEI. Coverage begins at 1 o'clock with the Panthers and Buccaneers squaring off in an NFC South matchup. I'm David Azer. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. More KJ and Lions coming up after this.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Is KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
Jay and Lyons on your Sunday here on WEEI, 617-779-7937. That's also the text line. Drake May, let's just face it, when he went to that blue tent yesterday, I felt like I was like, oh gosh, like all hope is completely lost. But probably the one, if only, shining moment in what was a complete darkness of despair yesterday was Drake May not only returning to the game, but making a very smart, heady play to get the lone touchdown of the game, the touchdown pass to DeMario Douglas. John, what does it say about this team that the rookie who got into the game, what, 5 weeks in, has been the shining light for the entire team this year?
Yeah, I think, and I would add in, Christian Gonzalez also left this game with injury, your best defensive player, maybe your best overall player as well. So to add injury to insult, if you will, yeah, I think it does say, at the most important position, you have a good foundation. Like, right. Drake May has shown since he went in week six against Houston, he's a better player now than he was then. And I didn't think Drake May was great yesterday. I thought he missed a few throws and he was kind of inconsistent. That toss sweep fumble play, I don't think that was all his fault, but he was involved in it, similar to the lateral fiasco last week in Buffalo.
I just don't think the team has that type of talent to run that type of play.
Yeah, you're probably right. And so I don't think it was all his, but he was involved. So I didn't think he played great yesterday.
Right.
But if you look at where he was in training camp, and then where he was when he started that first game against Houston, to where he was last week going toe-to-toe with Josh Allen and parts of this game, there's a lot to be encouraged there. So that's why when you look forward, like as angry as we are now with how bad they are, and we should be angry because it's been 5 years since Brady left. It's been 3 years since they even made the playoffs. They're one of the worst teams in the NFL. And obviously, being around here, we're not used to that in general. But even if we were used to that or not, it's just objectively been bad. But
I have a thought to that thought right there. So hold it, because let's get to David in the car. He's been holding on. David, thanks so much for calling KJ and Lyons. Good Sunday to you and happy holidays. Hello, David.
David.
All right, David's gone. Okay, so to your analogy about like what you're not used to, this may offend some people, but that's fine. It's okay. You ever see an apartment complex that, you know, at one point you're like, man, this is the place to go. It's got a beautiful pool. I mean, a great hangout. Good looking people live here. It's very sociable. But then go to that same apartment complex like 25 years later. Pool's decimated. You got holes. The gate doesn't really work. You know, there's a hole in the side of the fence. It happens to every NFL team in some way or shape or form. Here's what's different with the Patriots versus every other team pretty much in the history of the NFL. You've had a whole generation of people grow up with nothing but winning and never a down streak, right? So you always paid premium price for the merch. The tickets were always higher than most. There were no games you could finally get in to see because it was such a high demand for. This is one of the first teams in the modern game that we're seeing, right? So the 49ers were dominant in the 80s and then had some really ugly times once you get into the early 2000s. The Pittsburgh Steelers, even though there's been this consistency of Mike Tomlin not having a losing season over his 18 years, people would say, what has he won? And there's a frustration in that. Here you have a situation where it was complete and total dominance. And on top of that total dominance, you had a little slice of time where you didn't win it, but people had to beat you to get there to win it. So you were in there when you were even losing, okay? The Chiefs, like, to put in perspective, you know, you ever do this comparison? How many, like, if you compared how many people lived on your block based on how many people live on that same block in China, it's like 50 people may live on your block, but if you put that same block in China, it's like 6,000 people live on that block. Well, it's like that with the Patriots in terms of you've had all these years of greatness, and even what the Chiefs are doing right now, it's still really, it's small in comparison to the 22 years that you had here. So for the fan base, a lot of people have never seen this. This is why you have to talk to someone who's really like over the age of 40 to understand what a bad Patriots team looked like and what they went through, and if even they paid that much attention to the Patriots at that time.
Yeah, I mean, if you were born in 1995, then the first 25 years of your life, they were good every single year, basically.
Right.
I mean, that's even again, they
since
went to
the Crafts have owned
96.
The team.
Yeah, right. And that's, and somebody had, we had this discussion on the post-game show yesterday. Someone called in, and it's like, if you take the totality of the 30 years of the Kraft ownership, it's been an A+, right? Six Super Bowl wins, 10 appearances. But if you take the last 3 years, it's been like a D. And it's just like, that's the thing. And I would even say that was the whole Belichick conversation with drafting. You take the first 15 years, they drafted really well. You take the last seven, and then you look at this roster and say, oh, that's why they're not good, you know, this year. Or even the Elliott Wolf conversation. You take the Drake May pick, that's an A+. You look at the rest of the moves in the offseason, you're like, eh, it's not really a lot there. So that's why, too, I think part of it is so many people are not used to a team being this bad. They also are aware of what the standard could be because they saw football at its best for 20 years. So you combine that with the fact that this team really isn't getting any better. Like, it'd be one thing if they won 4 games last year, they fire the coach because they were terrible, and the GM, they were terrible, and then this year they won 6 games and they were competitive and a few other losses, right? But even if they win this week, the best they can do is match their win total from a year ago. And I think that's where not just the frustration, but some of the concern for the long-term outlook of this team comes in, with the only, I guess, silver lining or guiding light being Drake May is a rookie quarterback.
Joining in the conversation, KJ in line, 617-779-7937. David has emerged from one of the tunnels in the car. Patriots talk. David, go ahead. Happy holidays, man.
Hi, good morning, guys. Thank you. Yeah, I could hear you guys. For some reason, couldn't hear me. So here's happy holidays, and here's the whole thing about this whole team. This is a disgruntled organization, starting with ownership right down to everyone, maybe the exception of some of the players. And I'll tell you right now, in my opinion, we cannot take another year of Gerard Mayo and this coaching staff. We need to break this up. We need to ask Mr. Kraft to step aside, let Jonathan run the show. I know Kraft wants to be in full control. He's done, okay? After what he did with Brady and Belichick and everything else, and not be prepared to have people in place to replace those guys, is a scandal. It's just, it's a shame. It's embarrassing to the ticket owners, you know, the season owners, ticket holders, I should say. And they're not doing anything about it. So why do we want to sit here and take another year of Gerard Mayo, who's clearly not ready to be a head coach? It's a waste of time. If we had, and I got to ask you guys this, if Mike Vrabel came in here as a head coach, would we or would we not have at least 3 more wins under our belt because of his experience?
I think you would. I think you have 2 or 3 more.
So the talent is that much greater in those 3 games? Like, I think the talent is what you have on the field. David, thanks for the call.
But also, too, like, let's say we had 3 more wins here for the Patriots. We're still only talking about a 6-win team, right? Like, so it's still not like it's like your point about the talent is true.
Well, here's a good example. So does Joey Sly make the field goal from 25 yards because Vrabel's the head coach? Right?
I think the discussion, though, is like if Vrabel, and Vrabel's just one name, even if it was Vrabel, Flores, even if you kept Belichick, like you look at some of these
you have a similar record.
How they manage the end of the first half and end of the game against Seattle. Like, I think that's a game you win. I think you beat Jacksonville and London, Tennessee as well. If you had a more experienced head coach, you probably beat Indianapolis in that game because maybe you don't allow an 18-play drive at the end of the game. Maybe you don't call a 0 blitz in the third quarter against the Rams and give up a 69-yard touchdown. That's why, again, the question to ask yourself, and the caller did, if they had a different coach, fill in the name here, Vrabel, Flores, Kep Belichick, whoever, would it look better than it does right now? And I think the answer is yes. But to be clear, KJ, and I agree with you on this, looking better does not equate to them being good. Because even three more wins, you'd still only be sitting at six wins because you have a bad roster.
I don't even know if they're at six wins. Here's what I think it really comes down to. Remember last year, you've been here about a year and a half, so maybe when you first got here and we worked together. Remember I floated the notion that potentially put in front of Belichick is, hey, we want you to stay, but either stay as the head coach or do personnel only. And I said, I don't know if Bill could just be a head coach and take the commands from another GM, and it probably is not going to end well. Remember that conversation we had?
Yeah, and I was hopeful they would follow your suggestion.
So here's why you might see what you're seeing. See, if Belichick is still the GM, despite how bad he is, but he's also your coach, he can sign you to the extension and get rid of you the same time. He can do that. If you're a player and you just signed an extension, you don't believe that Elliott Wolf is going to make any move on you if they just signed you. So therefore, do you have that same fear that you had when you take the field, knowing that your head coach is also your widowmaker if he needs to be, right? Because look, it was J.C. Jackson, right? Hey, that's really great. You're all pro last year. You're not here next year. Like, Belichick, this is where I give Belichick a lot of credit, and this is maybe what people are misconstruing between what's missing is Belichick could not only fire you from your job, but he could fire you from the team. Mayo can only bench you. Wolf probably doesn't have the cachet or probably doesn't have that control lever like Belichick did to say, I don't care if I just gave you an extension in March, you're gone. Like, Belichick could do that, and that probably would force more people to be on their toes. This is why I think you see the defense, and even maybe Ramondre Stevenson, I'll throw that name in there because on the offense side of the ball, because look who signed their extensions this year. Barmore, and we'll give him a bit of a pass because of the health issue. Duggar signed the extension. Ramondre Stevenson signed the extension this year. Jabril Peppers, Kendrick Bourne, David Godchow, Tavai. So Anthony Jennings,
all those guys have been worse.
All those guys, but yet they signed a new deal when Bill wasn't here.
Yeah, all of those guys. I mean, Kyle Duggar's been arguably their worst player on defense the second half of the year. I mean, Stevenson leads the league in fumbles. Like, yeah,
all those guys signed their new money. So like, it's like take the money and don't run. Look, you work hard. We talk about this in baseball. We talked about this with the Red Sox and some of these pitchers they've acquired. Man, you go hard when you know that you've got an extension coming up. That year before, you're going to show that you're worth every penny you got. That first year you get the money, you're thinking about all the things you were thinking about 2 years ago you were ready to buy once you got the new money. And sometimes it shows up on the field that you might be more concentrated on the things that this new contract got you versus doing the things that got you this contract.
Yeah, and I think it also goes back to, and you and I talked about this in the summer, you and I talked about this in the spring, heck, we even talked about it last winter. A lot of guys here, KJ, are new at their jobs. So your point about the Wolf cachet, if Elliott Wolf was an experienced GM who had built great teams, then he probably could afford to sign a guy to an extension and be okay cutting him 3 months later if he wasn't performing. But he's a rookie. If Gerard Mayo was an experienced guy who had been a head coach somewhere else even, or a coordinator for several years, maybe he would have the cachet built up to say, I'm going to bench this guy and I'm going to keep him benched for as long as I want. And we don't see that happening. And go, you know, it's not just those two guys either. I mean, you have position coaches like Dont'a Hightower, love him, probably the second most important player in the second half of the dynasty, never coached before, and he's coaching your inside linebackers. Tyler Hughes, your receiver coach, nice guy, don't get me wrong, but I think this is his first time being an NFL position coach, right? You have a lot of people and that doesn't mean necessarily they're going to suck. Like, Mayo could end up 5 years from now being a head coach that's pretty good, whether it's here or somewhere else. Same thing for Elliott Wolf at GM. The problem is, again, you have all these people doing this for the first time. Like, it's one thing to have, say, an inexperienced head coach, but you have a well-known GM and a really well-known and long-tenured defensive coordinator to kind of support him. But instead, all three of those guys are new at their positions. And I think that exacerbates the fact that they don't have a good roster and they're all learning as they go.
Look, I hate to say this, but what's happening is kind of something that you see that's kind of a fight that's going on X. Is you mentioned all these people, first year, right? That goes right into the argument that Kraft's reasserting control over the narrative over the entire team, right? To not have such a great of an opinion that you're going to butt heads with the ownership. Just the same way, like if you say something negative about Elon Musk on Twitter, don't be surprised if he pulls your verified badge and you're still paying a monthly rate. This is a scenario like when you say clean everybody out. Do you believe that if the Crafts cleared everybody out, they would go get nothing but elite guys with high levels of opinions who are on the verge of believing that they should have control over things like personnel and the ability to just cut guys left and right? Do you think those are the guys they go get?
It's a great question because I think the other side of that too, KJ.
I'd say no.
Are those the guys that want to come here?
So when people scream, this goes into the
like,
thing.
I think Vrabel would come here, and I think he'd be the guy. But that's an important piece, your head coach. But that's not the only piece, right, that they would want to turn over here.
Well, here's what I think honestly could have been a potential scenario, just maybe like 2%. A conversation with Vrabel is, look, you know, we're moving with Gerard Mayo as the coach in waiting. We have that in writing. Would there ever be an interest of you coming here? And I'm sure the answer is probably yes, okay? We can say there's a yes coming here. But what if Vrabel says, but I would definitely want to be able to have some control over personnel because this was the issue he had where? In Tennessee. So if they say, well, no, that's off the deal, that's off the table right there. You know, like the Crafts are not going to bring in a head coach that's going to want to be able to say, hey, because of my experience, I believe I should also be doing personnel as well. Think about it. Gerard Mayo's still the head coach of this team in 15 years, guess what he also is not doing? Personnel. So, as long as, you know, maybe Jonathan Kraft has a different view on that, I don't know. But just to put it in perspective, like, Mayo could be the successful coach, lots of wins, things turn around, you've got a great organization running. He's still not going to be in charge of personnel. This is what this is all about. Change, bringing it all the way to the studs of the house, including a first-year head coach that's never coached anywhere, a first-time GM, a first-time offensive play caller, first-time defensive coordinator. Like you said, these things are unheard of. Usually there's someone on the staff who's done it like 3 years somewhere else.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, look, it's tough to see the house taken down to the studs, but this is what happens when the house has been a palace for 25 years in a league where usually if a team gets a really good run, maybe 5-6 years.
Yeah, and I think if you look around the NFL, I mean, how many situations does the coach really have final say over everything on the roster? Even Andy Reid works in tandem with, Brett Veach, the GM of the Chiefs.
Right.
And Sean McVay has a lot of power there. I think he's the lead voice, but they still have a strong GM structure as well. Like Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch kind of work together
right.
in San Francisco. And those are guys that have more power, but there's really not a scenario I can think of that's exactly like what the Crafts had here with Belichick. And even the Belichick thing, he did not get full power until after he won his third Super Bowl here. So unless you have a coach that comes in and wins three Super Bowls here, I don't think the Crafts are ever going to do that. And look, on that point, I think there's justification to not do that. Like, you should have a separate GM and head coach. Now, they have to work well together, and maybe certain areas like Mayo has to have power where if a guy really is underperforming, he can say, we got to get rid of this guy and cut
him. But I think that comes in time, not in a first year.
Sure. Like, and that's the thing, because even you look at when Belichick was here and had full power, he was still at his best when he had another strong voice in the room, whether it was Scott Pioli or Nick Caserio or the 1 year in 2021 with Dave Ziegler. That was, I thought, when he was at his best personnel-wise, when sure, even if he had a lot of say or eventually total control, you had this other really strong and respected voice in the room that either he would listen to or could push back on him. So that's when they were at their best. I think the issue now is you have Mayo and Wolf, who are two guys who, like I said, 5 years from now could be good at their jobs, but right now it's two rookies. It's not like you had Scott Pioli with a rookie head coach or Thomas Dimitroff with a rookie head coach or vice versa. You got two guys that are both rookies and both learning on the job, going through like 3 years from now.
Hold on a second. Yeah. Let's go to Bob in Brimfield, 617-779-7937. Bob, thanks for joining KJ and Lyons. You're on the air.
Good morning, guys. Hey, yeah. I'm listening to you, and this sounds like the blueprints to be the New York Jets. You got to stick and hold what you have. Either you believe in this guy or not. You fire the coach, you still have the owner that doesn't spend money. So what's the point? You're not going to hire a great coach. Who's going to want to come here? I think you already touched upon that.
Bob, thanks for the call.
Yeah. And we've talked about this, KJ, right? Like, you don't want to fall into the trap of what bad organizations do. Like, I keep bringing up the example of Hunter Henry. He's been here 4 years, and he's had four different offensive coordinators, right? Like, you've had three different four different starting quarterbacks since the beginning of the 2020 season. Like, that's what bad organizations do. So, like, the argument, and look, if you could get Brian Flores or Mike Vrabel, I would make the change for Mayo. I think the argument to keeping Mayo, if you want to look at the other side of it, is there are a lot of great coaches that had bad first seasons, and the roster's so bad, it's tough to fully judge the coaching staff, and vice versa. So, like, again, you don't want to the caller's point, you don't want to fall into that trap of being a bad organization.
Well, that's the other part of it. Either you grow together through the pains together, and that's why you probably have a lot of first-year guys, or you try and mix and match pieces where, okay, this person isn't happy, and then that person isn't happy, and then you have 5-6 years of dysfunction with a good roster. And that's even worse, right? Because that's really what the New York Jets are.
That's like the Dallas Cowboys right now.
Well, the Jets probably have the best roster in the league with the record that they have, right? And not considering that they haven't been decimated by injuries, right? Like, the Jets have had no injuries this year and probably have the best roster with the worst record. That's a sign of things are a problem upstairs, or upstairs is too busy meddling with what's going on downstairs. At least with the Crafts, they're probably saying this. Let everybody start from the same point, right? AVP, yeah, you've been in the league longer as a coach probably than anybody on the staff, but now's your chance to actually call plays, and we're going to examine that. But they've already let you know that Gerard Mayo is the guy who we believe is going to be the leader in this locker room. And I believe that because I would rather Gerard Mayo be disliked at this point and it get better than to be liked at first and just like, oh, he's a likable guy, and it just got worse. So if it continues to get worse, then yeah, that's I think next season is going to be one of those things where the Crafts are now sitting up at the front of their seat and saying, we went to bat for Mayo all of last year with all the noise. Now there has to be rooms of improvement. Elliot Wolf, you need to be making some big type of deal where money is no object. And that I'll tell you what, we'll get to break. And then I'll continue the thought. We'll still talk football. We've got John Serenides from New England Football Football Journal joining us next hour as well. Hang out. It's KJ Lyons on your Sunday on WEEI.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money. KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
KJ and Lyons, WEEI, thank you so much for hanging out. 617-779-7937, and happy holidays. John and I will be back again tomorrow.
No, that's tomorrow.
Right. Yeah, the switches that were going on, like, as soon as I get home from the last show, it's like, okay, we're playing high. Like, what? Hey, what is going? Like, here's why.
You're with Fitz, KJ, and Fitzy tomorrow, right?
God bless. He just texted me, like, right away. I was like, and here's why I've been on edge, right? So this is the continuing story, John, of my kid who's been sick since Christmas Eve. Like, it has not gone away. Like, literally before the show, I'm at the doctor's office with her, and then my wife and I, she stays there. I break off. Like, I'm literally texting her, like, what was the results from the doctor? But so, when you come home, and I haven't had sleep because she's had, like, this hard cough. So we try and get a doctor's appointment for her. The day that we want to take her, those are filled up. So I'm kind of thinking, like, okay, maybe this is something going around. So then there's good news. She doesn't have the flu. It's nothing bronchial. It's just something weird going around. But it doesn't change the fact that my wife and I are getting no sleep. And Fitzy's discussing Monday show. I'm texting him, I'm like, bro, I will get to you on Sunday. I've got Monday show. Like, I'm glad you're excited. And then all these switches are coming on because I mean, I hate to use it in that analogy, so I'll say pause before I say it, is I know your body energy, right? So when putting together the stuff for the show, I know how you think, I know how you move. So, you know, putting together a show, it's like we're left and right brain, yep. Right? Where with Fitzy, he's like, I have these things and I have these thoughts and I have a song and dance and I want to do it at this. And it's just like, I just need to can I figure out if my kid is okay? Like, I'm not ready to talk about it right now. Did I really?
I appreciate the energy.
Did I bring behind the scenes stuff onto the air? I told myself internally I wouldn't do it. But yeah,
meanwhile,
my goodness,
you'll text me like 10 things for the show, and I'll just say, "Sounds good."
Yeah, that's right. Right, exactly. Sounds good. It's like Josh, like, sounds good. It's like there's like not so big explanation, or like even like before we show, we're gonna start with Mayo, and then we roll with the show. Like, I hate to give up the secrets of the sauce, if you will, behind KJ and Lions. It's good to be back to our Sunday morning fans. Like,
I was just thinking that. Since August was the last time you had a Sunday morning.
Yeah, so yeah, I totally get what just happened right there. Machinery, like, but yeah, like, yeah, I think it has to have been sometime in the summer.
Yeah, because football Sunday started whatever week one of the NFL season was, right after Labor Day. So actually, I think Labor Day weekend we might have been on that Sunday morning.
Right,
and the last time.
And if you're one that believes in a higher power, usually this is the time of the season where some of the part timers' time gets cut. And ours have multiplied and enhanced during that time. So
that's true.
So we're very thankful to be back here at this Sunday morning spot, but we're also very thankful that you just haven't been hearing us on Sunday. So for those who've listened Sunday, say, whatever happened to KJ and Lions, we've been doing some night shows as well. We've been filling in for Jones and Keith through this week until tomorrow, where everything switches around and everything. I think John just wants to go to Foxborough. I think that's what it really is. You know,
well, I do, but I don't know if that's going to happen now. So,
all the switches, like, we're all supposed to be filling in for the people who are supposed to be on vacation, and people are making switches on the vacation switches.
Yeah, I'm looking forward, though. I enjoy KJ.
Poor Dan Ball. I think Dan Ball is getting the heavy. He's getting the wrecker's ball of all this. Dan, you're going to fill it.
Yeah. Hey, Dan.
Welcome to the station.
Yeah. No, I'm with Andy Hart tomorrow in the afternoon. I'm looking forward to working with Andy. I did my first ever EEI show with Andy Hart, and since then I think we've only done like four more or five more. But I always enjoy the chance to work with Andy. I'll be on the afternoon show tomorrow. We're going to talk to Drake May. I believe we're going to talk to Jonathan Jones as well. So looking forward to talking to both of them and seeing how are they feeling going into the last week. And it's two interesting guys, because you and I have talked about this a lot, KJ. Yeah. Jonathan Jones is a guy, knows what it's supposed to look right. White, multi-time Super Bowl champion, been here 9 years. Drake May's the fresh-faced rookie starting quarterback, hope of the franchise. So it's always an interesting juxtaposition to talk to both of those guys on the same day.
Yeah, but Jonathan Jones' contract is up when?
I don't honestly.
2024 this year.
I thought so because he's one of the few guys that got a third contract from the Patriots.
Right, he did a 1 year. So that'd be interesting because I think, you know, when you get to Black Monday and they're like, which coaches are going to be gone, and there's going to be a whole nother rush of frustration, I think, from the fan base if Mayo's still here, which I think he is. And again, like, if you missed any of the show, this we talked about earlier, and it was kind of not heated, but intense conversation about Mayo's place in this organization. And most people are not used to it being right next to the seat of power, right? Usually a head coach is behind GM, maybe a president of operations or president of operations, and then two persons and then the owner. Where with Gerard Mayo, it's Gerard Mayo and the owner. You know, like,
when you think about the end of the season, and also too, to be clear, like, you and I, we don't like talking about people potentially losing their jobs. It sucks, and no one, and not enough fans and people appreciate that fact of how difficult that can be. But I think it's the reality of kind of where they're at, that it's a conversation. I wonder, though, we've talked about this a little bit, is there a disconnect between Robert and Jonathan Kraft on some of these decisions, where Robert said he picked Gerard Mayo to be his guy on an Israel trip 5 years ago? Well, does Jonathan have a stronger voice than he had 5 years ago? Like, I could see, like, if they get rid of Mayo, I think it's going to be more a Jonathan Kraft decision than a Robert Kraft decision. And I think if they keep Mayo, it's going to be more of a Robert Kraft decision than a Jonathan. And I'm not saying they're battling and they're at war and there's this huge issue, but I do think they're not fully in agreement about some of these hires, whether it's Mayo, Wolf, or some of the others.
I think they're in full agreement. You don't remember the cutaway just from a week ago on television? Like, they were both looking at that same piece of paper. It seemed like they're like, yeah, I agree too.
So yeah, Jonathan didn't go to Mayo's opening press conference, which was kind of a red flag.
But Mac Jones did, right? So, like,
I know, that was weird. That was
okay,
weird.
Right? So there you go, right? Like, I think there would be nothing unusual for Robert Kraft to play one role, Jonathan Kraft to play another role to the public eye, but yet still be on the same page behind closed doors, right? Because you always conceal your true intentions. Let's go to Coach in New Hampshire. Coach, thanks for calling KJ Lions. Happy holidays, and you're on WEEI.
And now your Live Nation lineup.
Hello, Coach.
Canadian rockers Silverstein bring their 25 right. years of noise
no,
toward
okay.
his Citizens House of Blues.
Sometimes Saturday, we just talk people off the phone. Or maybe sometimes we answer their questions.
Such a great point.
Friday, January 17th.
Like, exactly. Just take the shot. Let's take the shot. I think it's one of those, like, I think we're kind of getting a painful masterclass of how power works. Most people don't like it. You hear a lot of people yelling about it. I mean, God, there's this huge fight about power right now. When power reveals their real intentions, it really can upset some people. So you think about it. How often have you heard Kraft give sound bites this year?
I can't think of any, to be honest with you.
Like, you would think this could be the time where he can have a lot to say, all he wants to say. There's no stepping on Bill. There would be no questions about, hey, is the messaging, who we didn't believe, the messaging from Bill, who's been in charge for 20 years, or the guy who's owned the team for 25 years? More than that. But, you know, who are we putting our stock in this conversation?
Yeah. Where it's an interesting point, because I was talking to a Patriots fan about this yesterday.
Yeah.
And they were saying, and I think it's a fair question, with all these questions swirling around Mayo and Wolf and how the team has not gotten better and in some cases performed worse than expectations, do you think Kraft should just come out and say, no, I believe in Mayo, he's my guy, yes, the team is bad right now and it will get better, but he's my guy? Just to kind of definitively say, no, this is the direction we're going. And by him not doing that, do you think maybe he's second-guessing his decision a little bit?
Or does he not want to answer any follow-up questions once he gives
the
statement?
That could be it, too.
Right, like because that's the power play. If I don't address you, I don't have to answer you. Right, like that's we've seen this season when people have asked Gerard Mayo questions. They've asked specific questions about specific players, forcing the coach to say the specific player's name. But if you're Robert Kraft and someone now comes out there and specifically asks about a specific player, if you don't answer it, then there goes a narrative one way versus the other. Look, we'll come back. We'll get to your calls. We got Coach back. We got Mike calling in as well. 617-779-7937. It's KJ Lyons on your Sunday here on WEEI. Happy holidays.
The results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par with me, Maury Povich, wherever you get your podcasts.